there's people in the street. And the summer is almost here. Got to go outside in the fresh air and walk while it's still clear. Breathing in all the way down till your stomach too. Breathe the light with the region.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. What's bad for American fans is a score for Europeans. More than 150 recently locked out National Hockey League players have signed up to play in the European leagues until they get a new contract. Last week, owners locked out these players, saying their previous collective bargaining agreement was too costly. But the NHL Players Union is opposing a proposed salary cap. 47 NHL players went to the Czech League, 33 to the Russian League, and 30 to the Swedish League.
With contract negotiations basically at a deadlock, AFGE union leaders for Social Security Administration employees see only one option left: wait it out and see if the American people vote in a labor-friendly administration. Witold Sferchinski, co-chief negotiator for the SSA national contract, said that the agency has launched a full-scale assault and is trying to remove and reduce scores of benefits. Sferchinski said the SSA isn't the only branch of government being targeted.
This is being orchestrated by the Bush administration. We noticed that in other AFGE units that are in contract negotiations, their agencies are proposing similar language to strip their contracts of many of the benefits that employees have enjoyed over the years.
Sferchinski added that the only solution available if bargaining remains at a deadlock is to bring the dispute to the Federal Services Impasses Panel, a body he claims is made up of mostly anti-union Bush appointees. The negotiations, already into their 11th week, are scheduled to end by the end of November. Sferchinski said SSA officials know that the panel would most likely rule in favor of management, so the AFGE has little leverage.
I think the key element that may affect the bargaining is the election. I think if Senator Kerry wins the election, we would expect that, you know, once he becomes president, that he would have a different attitude about labor relations in the federal sector than President Bush.
An Israeli public worker general strike is costing the economy there $300 million a day. 300,000 workers are striking because 20,000 union members haven't been paid in months. Government officials won't pay up, even though they have the money, until the union accepts a program that would cut wages and cause hundreds of layoffs. The strike has shut down planes, trains, the stock exchange, banks, and post offices. Here's today's Dow Bob report. All wages are not created equal in the U.S., but now data shows that even within groups of workers with similar education and experience, there's growing wage inequity. Economic Policy Institute's State of Working America says most of the growth of wage inequality since 1979 has been driven by the growth of this within-group wage inequity. This wasn't happening from 1995 to 2000. The trend seems to contradict the idea that technology has generated greater wage inequalities by creating greater skill and education differences.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
This is a big time for America. It's not just another election, not merely about a list of issues, even though some of those issues are huge, including the deliberate downsizing of our middle class and the deadly war of lies in Iraq. What's at stake on November 2nd is the very idea of America itself. the historic idea that we might actually build a society based on our egalitarian ideals of economic fairness, social justice, and equal opportunity for all. The moneyed elites, presently working through Bush, Cheney, Ashcroft, Rumsfeld, and company, have decided that America should no longer bother pursuing egalitarianism. They are asserting a new ethic of privilege, declaring that the role of government is to take care of the good fortunes of the few and not worry about the well-being of the many. In their view, they're the top dogs and the rest of us are just a bunch of fire hydrants. Wielding their administrative blowtorches and legislative monkey wrenches, they're jerry-rigging America's rules so that money and power flow uphill, out of our neighborhoods, into their corporate suites and offshore bank accounts. They're seizing control of every decision that affects our lives, from wages to taxation, from what's in your dinner to what's in your daily news feed, from who goes to college to who goes to war. They're turning our America, our democracy, into their America of plutocracy and autocracy. As I travel around the country, I find that most people are aware that something fundamental has gone wrong, that this is not the America they thought they were born into. I recently saw an old pickup truck with a bumper sticker that asked, "Where are we going? And what am I doing in this handbasket?" People know that we're being led down some rabbit trail off of America's true path toward egalitarianism. This is Jim Hightower saying, I believe we're in another of those when in the course of human events moments that Jefferson wrote about. It's a big time for America. Time to take our country back.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live from Portland, Oregon. Here we are in the studios of KABU Radio. The community station here, it's a non-profit station, so they don't carry commercial radio, which is like this program, but they're kind enough to share a studio with us, and I just finished doing an hour and a half of fundraising with them on the air. It's remarkable. It's absolutely remarkable. We're seeing all this crossover and awakening, a great awakening all across America to the reality, the possibility of democracy. It's the first hour of our Friday program. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment, Congressman Bernie Sanders, since 1991, I believe, the only independent member of Congress. I think of Congressman Sanders, Bernie Sanders, as not just my congressman, but as America's congressman. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Hey, it's great to have you here. And where are you today, Bernie?
I'm back in Burlington. Came back from Washington last night. And let me begin, Tom, by congratulating all of the billionaires who are listening to your program. They're doing very well. The Forbes 400 came out, and there is 45 more billionaires in America today. So I did want to extend my congratulations to all of those folks.
Yeah. We've been running the billionaires for Bush spots in our program. In fact, you may hear one during this segment. It's sadly funny. What's going on this last week here in Congress, Bernie? What's on your mind?
Well, a couple of
things
that
you'd like to talk about. Before you start,
issues out there, the economic issues of more and more billionaires who have more and more wealth at the same time as poverty is increasing, as real wages for American workers are declining. But there's another issue out there that probably doesn't get the play that it should, and that is just yesterday, The House passed this under God Pledge of Allegiance bill, which is setting a horrendous precedent for undermining basic constitutional rights. And what they have done now for the second time within a month on the floor of the House, and this particular bill is not going to go anyplace, but the precedent is horrendous and very frightening. What they have said is essentially, we can pass anything we want on the floor of the House, and then we can include in that legislation language which says that the U.S. Supreme Court or the federal courts cannot review what we have done. In other words, what they are doing is undermining the separation of powers and undermining the constitutional rights of the American people.
It's a bizarre form of...
Doesn't matter whether it's constitutional or not, we have the votes and we're going to pass it, and the courts cannot rule on what we are doing. An incredibly dangerous precedent for what... And these guys claim to be, quote-unquote, conservative. This is as far away as you can get from being conservative.
This sounds like a coup d'etat, Bernie. By the way, before we go any further, let me give our phone number out, because I know you like to take calls from our listeners. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. One of these newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894, and you can be on the air live with Congressman Bernie Sanders and Tom Hartman here. Bernie, is this a fundamental and radical transformation of our form of government?
It really is. I mean, what these guys, you know, you and I grew up believing that in a democracy there are two sides, three sides, whatever sides to an issue. And at the end of the day, sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. But what these guys are saying is the Constitution doesn't really matter. We have the votes on the floor of the House, so we'll exclude the Constitution.
Yeah.
If
they play to
it
win,
takes
period.
17 minutes for a vote, a vote is scheduled to take 17 minutes on the floor of the House. Why, if we're losing at the end of 17 minutes, as we were under the prescription drug Medicare bill, that's not a problem. We'll just keep the rolls open for 3 hours until we twist enough arms. If we don't like how the vote goes in Florida, well, we'll just have our friends in the Supreme Court stop the recount in Florida. So these are guys who do not really believe in rules. They don't particularly believe in law. And they are a scary bunch, which just tells us how important this election is this November.
Yeah, I'd say they don't believe in democracy. I mean, ultimately, is what it boils down to when you look at it in this context.
Right, because the essence of democracy is that there are rules that we abide by, and sometimes you win and sometimes you lose.
Yeah.
But they don't intend to lose, and therefore you're going to change the rules of the game. And that is, you're right, that is undermining the fundamental tenets of democracy.
Yeah, our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on the program. Bernie, in the last couple of days, we saw this juxtaposition of George Bush doing happy talk about Iraq, and then Alawi doing happy talk about Iraq. A lot of stuff is coming out now about Alawi's sordid past as, his affiliation with various police agencies from the CIA to Hussein's bunch. But what's your take as a member of Congress and as an inside observer of all this, of what's happening in Iraq?
I can't believe that there is any disagreement between any group of sensible people that what is going on in Iraq today is nowhere near what Bush and his friends planned for. The fact that we are extending tours of duty, the fact that we're taking 50, 55-year-old National Guards people and putting them into the very dangerous situation in Iraq clearly should tell everybody in America that what's happening there is not what Bush planned for, and the whole occupation is going quite poorly. As every listener knows, we have tragically lost over 1,000 men and women. Some 7,000 have been wounded. We're spending $200 billion. There are areas in Iraq now which are no-go zones for American troops. Despite the killing of many insurgents and terrorists, more seem to be cropping up. Around the world, anti-American sentiment is literally at an all-time high, which suggests that long-term you're not going to win the war on terrorism if people in Pakistan and Jordan hate the United States of America. I can't see how anyone can spin this in a positive way. the real question that we face, Tom, which is a very difficult question, is what do you do now? And I don't think there are any particularly good solutions. I haven't heard of anybody who said, look, this is the magical way to get out. I think ultimately that we've got to get out as soon as we possibly can, provide the kind of financial assistance with, along with other countries that Iraq needs to rebuild, bring in as many international people as we can to help with the rebuilding and the military protection. But this America's presence there, I think, in some intrinsic way, is counterproductive to the war on terrorism, and in many ways is playing into the hands of Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, as Rumsfeld said in his own memo to himself, you know, are we creating, for every terrorist we kill, do we create five more? I forget his exact language, but basically all these people have families. They're
that's right.
Let's go to the phone lines here, pick up a few phone calls. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number on line one. Kodak from Durham, North Carolina is on the line. Hey, Kodak, welcome to the program.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen. Yeah, I agree with Bernie. I keep on hearing people say we can't pull out of Iraq. We need to think outside of the box also. And yes, we can pull outside of the box. Now that people see that you can't make any money over there, I'm sure a lot of the people that was for the war in the beginning now are seeing that they can't make any money. So what do we have to lose? And we can't keep fighting on all fronts. We can just look at what they estimate. There are 4 to 5 million illegal people in the United States that they estimate that is here. So we have this porous border and this inadequate system of really trying to bring about security. So since it's inevitable that we cannot secure our borders, we must start looking at the alternatives and looking at it toward a peaceful, I hate to say it, but a compromised, with dealing directly with their problems that they have with the United States.
Yeah,
let me respond to that by saying there is a lot of evidence to suggest that when we spend $200 billion and we bring in, you know, a significant number of troops into Iraq, that in some ways that is detouring us, deflecting us from the real fight against Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. And a very strong argument can be made, despite Bush's assertions, that what we're doing in Iraq is taking us away from what our real enemy is, and that is Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda. And in fact, there are a lot of studies that suggest that you're seeing al-Qaeda cells popping up, you know, in more and more countries. And I think we've got to focus on the very serious problem of international terrorism, and that's where our energy should be going.
Yeah, right. Thanks, Kodak, for the call.
A heartwarming story.
Okay, quickly.
I talked with, I wore my Beat Bush button today, and I was at the truck dealership, and I know a lot of the people there, and I was surprised to find that there were people that actually, once I talked to them, I made this statement that, you must listen to Fox News, and they was like, how do you know I listen to it every morning? And the moral of that story is, thanks to your program, Tom, I have become very active and also knowledgeable. So I was able to not talk about George Bush's cocaine use or any of those things, just the things that he did in this administration. And I got someone interested and wanted to find out more information. And instead of, Kerry's doing a wonderful job, but forget the swing voter, which there is none. Get out your base. Energize your base. We put a personal faith on this message. And the people that know us will respect our word and the information we're giving them. So that's
Well said, Kodak. Hey, that's great. Thank you for that. And, Kodak, great to hear from you. Always great to hear from you. And keep on, you know, spreading the good word with the truckers there. Bernie, we have Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on line three here, 1-866-889-8894. Rick, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Yes. Good Friday to you. I guess it's morning where you are, Tom, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to bring up something. Congressman, as you know, Senator Richard Lugar and Senator Chuck Hagel were expressing some dismay at the Iraq policy. And Tom, as you know, you had Richard Viguerie on early this week. I wanted to kind of tie these two things together because, Congressman Sanders, for your information, I was speaking to Mr. Viguerie, and I was praising some of the past Republicans who were in power. Some are deceased, some are still alive, such as Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, Nelson Rockefeller, Charles Percy, those kind of folks, and even people like Jack Kemp, nowadays. And Mr. Vigory didn't hear any of the praise I gave to the people that I mentioned. He seemed to not like the fact that I criticized Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, and I forget the other name now. Anyway, Tom DeLay, your friend Tom DeLay. And I guess my point in tying these two issues together is it seems like no matter what anybody says about George Bush, even if it's two guys like Lugar and Hagel who are pretty conservative, and, you know, even John McCain, but if anyone doubts George Bush or if anyone says anything bad about Tom DeLay, somehow they are a subversive left-winger. What do you think about that?
No, I think that that's true, and I do not tolerate dissent very, very well, and I certainly don't tolerate it in the floor of the House where the extreme right wing has managed to cow a lot of moderate Republicans who in their hearts know better. But your point that people like Lugar...
Bernie, I've got to ask you to hold that thought, because the machine here is going to dump us in just a second. 1-866-889-8894, it's the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Due to the rising rate of overweight Americans, more hospitals are being forced to spend money on patient lift systems and specialized hospital beds and wheelchairs. The U.S. Center of Disease Control reports that 65% of American adults are overweight and 31% are obese. Sizewise Rentals, whom specializes in medical equipment for the obese, has reported its business growing 15 to 20% each year.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for the facts on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment, our regular Friday afternoon segment. If you'd like to call in, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And you too can talk with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our independent member of Congress, in my opinion, America's congressman. And the lines are open if you'd like to call in right now.
1-866-889-8894. Continue where we were a moment ago. When we
okay, yeah, go for it, Bernie.
Let me read you a quote that comes from Chuck Hagel. And as you know, Chuck Hagel is no great liberal or progressive. He is a conservative Republican from Nebraska. And this is what he said regarding the war in Iraq. He said this recently. He said, the worst thing, and I quote, the worst thing we can do is hold ourselves hostage to some grand illusion that we're winning. Right now, we are not winning. Things are getting worse. The fact is, we are in deep trouble in Iraq. End of quote. And Lugar's statement, and McCain has been very critical as well. So it is not just progressive types who are worried about what's happening in Iraq. You're having some honest conservatives make the same point.
Yeah, you know what baffles me, Bernie, about this whole thing is why we're not allowing Iraq to rebuild Iraq. I mean, here's a country that was successful in building you know, office buildings and schools and sanitation. I mean, they had a very sophisticated country there. They have the know-how within their country to rebuild their country. They can do it for a fraction of the cost of hiring Halliburton. Why is it that only American contractors and the buddies of American contractors and the contributors to the Bush campaign are being invited into Iraq to
well,
to
Kodak
so
raised
rebuild
that issue
this
before.
Country?
It's a country and it's no great secret where folks, Halliburton et al., are making a whole lot of money working there. And the pity of it is, as you indicate, that by putting Iraqis to work, A, you could save a lot of money because the prices will be much lower, and second of all, you could deal with a very serious problem of unemployment there.
Right, and then we wouldn't maybe we wouldn't have the insurgency.
And
yeah, let's
one
go
of
to the
great
phones.
Concerns now, and it's a vicious circle, is that as the security situation becomes more dangerous, what you're doing is taking money out of the pot of rebuilding Iraq, which can win us the hearts and minds of the Iraqi people, putting it more into security, and you got a catch-22 there, whereas by which we have more antagonism, more dislike of America, less rebuilding of the country, and less support. So it's not a good situation.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go to our phone lines. Jesse in Santa Fe, 1-866-889-8894. Jesse in Santa Fe is on line one. Hey, Jesse, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I was listening to you yesterday and tried to get through but couldn't after Lawi's speech to Congress, and it just sounded to me like a Bush campaign speech. And I wonder if maybe we could get to the bottom of that and find out whether the Bush campaign wrote that speech.
Let me answer this question, Jesse. One would have to be awfully naive not to believe that anything that is happening now and will happen between now and Election Day is not politically oriented. Do you think it was just an accident that this gentleman happens to come to Washington, D.C.?
Oh, yes. Well, and we all know that that was politically oriented.
And of course,
but, I mean,
in terms of who writes
further,
I don't know who wrote this speech, but I think
it would be a terrible, terrible thing for the Bush campaign if it got out that they wrote the speech. I don't know how we get to the bottom of that. Is there any way?
Well, I don't know who wrote the speech, and I don't know that you'll ever find who wrote the speech, but to think that this guy would give a speech which would not have been approved or gone over or discussed with the Bush administration, that he would be popping up saying things that are different than the point of view that from the president is not very likely.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. Well, anyway, you're coming to Santa Fe soon. We look forward to seeing you.
Who's that, me?
Oh, Bernie.
Bernie, you're going
Bernie
to Santa
Sanders
Fe?
Not that I know, but who knows? Sometimes I don't know where I'm going, so we'll...
Okay.
Well, you are. At least there's an invitation out there for a fundraiser. So we'll look forward to seeing you, and thanks a lot.
That's great. Jesse, thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Bernie, I have a report here that says that Iraq's main power plant is now producing half the electricity it did before the start of the war. The administration recently announced 20% of reconstruction funds would have to be shifted over to security from reconstruction.
That's just what I meant a moment ago. Is as the security situation becomes more dangerous, they're going to be taking money out of reconstruction and using it for military purposes. And that's going to only, I think, make a bad situation worse because people are going to be looking around them and saying, hey, you know, we have no electricity, we have no clean water, we have no jobs. What's going on here?
Yeah,
saying... A very difficult situation.
Yeah, and they're saying, and it must be the fault of the Americans. And then off they go. We'll be right back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Excellent news, Americans. U.S. corporations say that they are no longer offshoring our middle-class jobs. It seems that they've grown afraid of the rising public anger at this self-serving fattening of their already ample bottom lines at the expense of working families. They fear that there will be a political backlash from workers, customers, Congress, and plain old American patriots. Does this mean that greed-headed CEOs are no longer shipping our manufacturing, professional, and high-tech jobs to India, Pakistan, Russia, and other low-wage centers? Of course not. It simply means that they no longer say the word offshoring. Instead, the doublespeak artists of corporate PR departments have coined new euphemisms. Rather than offshoring, they now call it remote global sourcing or right-shoring to disguise the perfidy. A new report finds that offshoring, by whatever name, is not only continuing unabated, but accelerating rapidly and expanding into new fields. If you're an architect, if you do legal work or tax preparation, if you're an editor or radiologist, say bye-bye to your professional position, for CEOs are putting these and many more on a virtual boat overseas, with about 80% of the jobs going to India, where they can get the work done for a third or less than they pay to us Americans. The report, prepared by Forrester Research, says that offshoring is increasing dramatically. Forrester's previous prediction was that the U.S. would lose 588,000 jobs to offshoring by the end of this year. Now it estimates that 830,000 will be lost, a 41% increase. Nearly half of corporations surveyed say they're either offshoring jobs now or preparing to. Well, says one offshoring specialist, so what? Quote, it's free enterprise. We're trying to make money. Yeah, and so are bank robbers. This is Jim Hightower saying the proper word for what these CEOs are doing is not offshoring, it's stealing. They're stealing America's middle-class future.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror. My wife's still in bed. And this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment, our regular Friday afternoon feature, or Friday morning, depending on where you are in the country. Our number, 1-866-889-8894. Alice in Old Joe, Arkansas is on line one. Hey, Alice, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. And hi, Bernie. Nice to be here. I was just listening to you, and I had just finished reading the article by Naomi Klein in Harper's Magazine about the whole business dealings in Iraq. And the statement she makes at the end just blew me away. She's talking about Tom Foley, who was the head of private sector development in Iraq, who's now left, of course, there's no private sector there, and is co-chair of George Bush's reelection committee in Connecticut. But on the day the Abu Ghraib broke, he was speaking about business prospects in Baghdad, in Washington, and his statement was, whatever you're seeing, it's not as bad as it appears. You just need to accept that on faith. And that just sends chills through me. Do not believe your eyes. We know what's happening there, and it's not really as bad as you think it is.
Well, as I'm just looking right now at a chart done by the military about the number of Americans who have died in Iraq, and this month, September, is going to be the worst month that we've probably had in 4 or 5 months in terms of the number of fatalities. So
but it's not
maybe easy for this guy to say it, but not for the families of loved ones who are getting killed.
Yeah, it's tragic.
Alice, thanks for the call. You raise a good and important point. Our number, 1-866-889-8894. And many, Vermont, on a per capita basis, is even bearing perhaps
our
a disproportionate share of this.
The state of Vermont has lost some 12 young men.
Yeah, this is more than we've lost to homicides in the same period of time, I'll bet. You know, it's in fact, I'm quite sure of. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Bill in Hood River, Oregon, is on the line. On line three here. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. A suggestion, I guess. In American slang, we have this expletive that seems to flow out of us when things are blatantly untrue, and it's typically abbreviated with a B followed by an S. Mm. And I think perhaps instead of using that expletive, what should flow out of us is simply bush.
Yeah.
Or instead of saying that's such expletive, instead say that's so bush. When somebody tells us that everything in Iraq is going okay, we simply say that's so bush.
Yeah. Let's reclaim our, let's reinvent our language.
Yeah, yeah.
Bernie, do you
well,
see...
I think, in addition to that, I think we have got to do our best to tell the truth about what's going on in Iraq, but also tell the truth what's going on in America. And one of the things that amazes me is that Bush gets on television every day and he talks about how the economy is growing. This guy is the first president since Herbert Hoover to oversee a loss of jobs. Real wages in America are going down. Poverty is increasing. The gap between the rich and the poor, we talked about billionaires, increase the number of billionaires. Poverty in America is going up. Healthcare system is disintegrating. The Bush administration, we just had a fellow in Washington the other day. His name is Dr. Peter Roast. You may have followed that, Tom. He is a vice president with Pfizer.
Yeah.
And he broke grounds, finally, the first major drug company executive to say, hey, all of this crap about how we can't reimport safe and affordable medicine from Canada and Europe is total nonsense. Of course we can do it. We can lower the prices in America.
Yeah,
Bush,
and you wonder...
You know, Bush is working day and night with the drug company. So these guys, you know, are telling untruths day and night and day and night, and we've got to expose it, and we've got to organize people to fight back.
Yeah, well said. And Bill in Hood River, Oregon, thanks for the call. Bernie, do you think that guy is going to be toast? The guy from Pfizer who spoke up?
He was in my office and we talked for a while. The problem they have is that Pfizer fires him tomorrow. What happens? It's going to be on the front page of every newspaper in America, and this story will get even more publicity. He has this particular fellow, his name is Dr. Roast, is a vice president at Pfizer, has worked. He's a Swedish fellow, now a naturalized American, but he worked in Europe for many, many years. And he said, look, what you want to do here in the United States has been done in Europe for many, many years, no problems, and it results in lower prices.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I lived in Germany for a year. I mean, the system works very well. It works very efficiently. It's very inexpensive. Let's go back to the phones, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number on line one, Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, is on the phone. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Good morning, Bernie.
Good morning, Roy.
A couple of three things. One, this whole thing with Iraq is really personal with me now. My nephew was injured over there 3 or 4 months ago. He's on his way home on a compassionate leave because my mother-in-law is dying. But he should have been home 4 weeks ago, but everything went to hell, and he got sent out on various missions because everything had gone to hell, even though we were told how great things are going. But sideways to that, the outrage over the demanding of personal information from airline flyers, that is... Where is this invasion of privacy going?
Well, it's going worse, Roy, and you raise a very good issue, and there's some evidence to suggest that as we speak, the Republican leadership, at least in the House, is working on more anti-civil liberties language to be placed in the intelligence reform bill that's coming down the pike.
So now, is that because with regard Ridge to civil has liberties all these investments in... conflicts of interest type things, or is that because they found explosives and guns being able to get on the airplanes, even though that we've been doing all this crap for 3 years?
Well, I'm not sure what the motive is, but I think you have an attorney general today who really does not take constitutional rights of the American people terribly seriously, and believes that the government has a right to do almost anything that it wants. And I think it's a very, very dangerous trend for those of us who believe in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, Roy, thanks for the call.
One other point I'd like to get your comments on, Bernie, is the it's coming out now that the FDA was covering up and allowing the drug companies on these antidepressants and things to just absolutely cover up and stonewall, and the FDA was going along with it. Is there any... I mean, is there no sense of outrage on the other side? How can these folks that are parents and grandparents allow this to be happening to even their families?
Yeah. Well, all that I could tell you is, to say the very least, because I deal with the FDA all of the time, we've been mostly dealing with this issue of reimportation, trying to lower the cost of prescription drugs, and they have simply been parroting the lines of the pharmaceutical industry and working with the industry day after day.
Yeah, and on it goes. It's this bizarre dance. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. We're talking with it's Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, our Friday afternoon segment. Mike in Orlando, Florida, is on the line on line three. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Question basically about the undecideds. We've had a few on Tom that aren't impressed with either, saying they may vote Libertarian or otherwise. And I haven't heard it suggested, but wouldn't it be wise to tell them just to keep in check, at least if they don't vote for Kerry, that they should vote Democratic to keep the government balanced?
That's a good – Mike makes a good point. And one of the issues out there, and we've in general been talking about it today, is the lack of oversight, the lack of accountability that Congress is calling for from the White House. And what you're seeing when Clinton was president – you know, every other day, no matter what Clinton did, there'd be an investigation and so forth and so on. With Bush, you're not seeing that at all, because the chairman of all of the committees in the House and the Senate are Republicans, and they have chosen not to try to make the president accountable because they think it's counterproductive to their political goals. But everybody who's listening should understand that many people don't. You have a Republican president, a Republican House, a Republican Senate. And it is very hard to think that we're going to get accountability if the Republicans continue to control all three branches of government. Also, in terms of the undecided voters, I understand that a lot of people are not enthusiastic about Kerry. But what you really have to do, I think, is take a hard look. Just open the window. Look out. What's going on in America? Make a judgment on how this president is doing. When you're running for office and you're an incumbent, what the election is about, to a significant degree, is on how well or not well you have done. And I think any objective analysis about what's gone on in this country in the last 4 years, the economy, environment, whatever it may be, would suggest that this president has not done a good job.
Yeah. Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Les in Ypsilanti, Michigan, listening on WSDS, I assume. Hey, Les, on line one here. Welcome to the program.
Okay, thank you.
What's up, Les? You're live.
I'm just talking to you, your people there, I guess it was. I was in Texarkana, Arkansas, about 3 years ago, right after Bush come in. And I'd never heard of the mess that CBS is in until there's three or four guys sitting there. It was in a restaurant. There's three or four guys sitting there talking. And said, one of them said, how in the hell could he be elected president and he deserted during wartime? And I just say something else to one of your buddies there. The Bible reads, God created man in his own image, right?
That's, yeah.
Okay. How did George Bush slip through the cracks?
Okay. Les, thanks for the call. Bernie, you know, how on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., how is this whole thing with, you know, it seems to me like they've very effectively deflected the Dan Rather's report from Bush didn't show up and he got preferential treatment to were some of these documents forged.
These guys are brilliant. I mean, I really, you know, I often think, Tom, that if they spent 1% of the time trying to do good things for the middle class of this country and for ordinary people in this country, as opposed to what they do politically, we'd be in great shape. They are political geniuses. They know how to deflect attention away from those things that hurt them and so forth and so on. But to be very honest with you, I mean, I happen to believe that the attack on Kerry and his service in Vietnam was an outrage and a lie. But the reality is it doesn't matter what happened in Vietnam or Texas 35 years ago. I don't stay up nights worrying about what Bush did or did not do. What I stay up nights worrying about is whether there are going to be decent-paying jobs for our kids, whether people in America are going to have affordable medicine, whether Americans are going to see the disintegration of our health care system, whether we're going to continue to see the unraveling of environmental protections. Those are the issues that we should be focusing on right now. And again, I think if you look at what's going on in the economy, if you look at the fact that we're losing good-paying jobs, they're going to China, they're going to Mexico, new jobs that are being created, low wage, low benefit, anti-union. If you look at that reality, it's incredible to me that people would not be saying we've got to make a change.
Yeah, Bernie, Jonathan Weissman in the Washington Post yesterday wrote an article. Let me just feed you one sentence, and then I'd love to know your thoughts on how this came about and how are these people thinking that brings this about. This is from the article. The headline was "Bid to Save Tax Refunds for the Poor is Blocked," and he writes, "Congressional negotiators beat back efforts yesterday to expand and preserve tax refunds for poor families, even as they added $13 billion in corporate tax breaks to a package of middle-class tax cuts that came to a vote in the Senate today." What's going on? How are these people, how do they sleep at night?
That's not the point. They sleep fine. They really do.
Yeah.
I think, again, what people do not appreciate is the degree to which the Congress today is owned and controlled by big money interests. It is not difficult to trace every piece of legislation that comes down the pike to financial contributions and the desires of the banking committee, the banking interests of the credit card companies or the pharmaceutical industry or the insurance industries. That is what is going on. And low-income people have virtually no clout in Washington. They don't, in large degrees, they don't vote. They certainly don't contribute huge amounts of money to the Republican Party. Money is what talks and money carries the day, and we're seeing that probably to a greater extent than we have seen certainly in the modern history of the United States. And the result of that is we're not raising the minimum wage, we're not giving lower income families the kinds of tax credits that they deserve, but yet we do give huge amounts of tax breaks to the richest people in this country and the largest corporations. And that is simply, Tom, a reflection of the kinds of money that is coming in to the political process.
Yeah, one of these days, Bernie, we need to have a good discussion about, you know, what are the possible solutions for this. But we've got a couple more callers here, so if that's okay with you, we'll move along to them. Okay, great. On line three here, Norm in Fair Oak, California is on the line. Hey, Norm, welcome to the program.
Hi. Yeah, what I'm hearing Bernie say, the thing that really hit me is this morning I saw on the Forbes list, the Forbes 400, and the thing that struck me most was that 400 people now account for about $1 trillion worth of wealth. And if you really think about that, that's absolutely insane. That's about, if you compared it to GDP of this country, it's about 8% of their $12 trillion GDP. And that amount of wealth in the hands of 400 people, that's an increase just over the last year alone from 262 people were billionaires, now 313 this year. The income disparity in this country just seems to be accelerating at such a rapid pace. And here I am, I've been looking at a little bit less than cost of living increases now for the last 5 years, and everything is getting more and more expensive. It just feels so hopeless.
Norm is raising a hugely important issue that is very rarely discussed. You don't hear it much on the floor of the House. I talk about it. Very few people do. You don't see it on TV. You don't see it in the newspapers very often. And what Norm is talking about is the fact that in the United States today, we have by far the most unfair and unequal distribution of wealth and income of any major country on earth, and that today's income distribution is worse than it has been since the 1920s. It is a huge issue, and Norm is absolutely right. It's something we've got to discuss. It is immoral, and it's wrong, and it's getting worse.
Well said. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 1-866-889-8894. 10 minutes before the hour, we're coming with Congressman Bernie Sanders, and we will be right back. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me for a short talk and book signing on Monday, September 27th at the Barnes & Noble in South Burlington, Vermont. I'll be discussing my current book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. Now, more than ever, citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president. If we are to continue being the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles. For more information, call BNN Burlington at 802-864-8001. That's 802-864-8001.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Thurston, where did you suddenly get that walkie-talkie?
I've had it all along, my dove. You see, the statute of limitations on my creative accounting is up. Time to end this tropical charade and return to our billions.
Oh, do we have to go back? It's so cozy here on the island.
My dear, don't you listen to the coconut radio? It's the best time ever to be a billionaire in America. More than half of the last tax cut went to the wealthiest 5%.
But the voters will never allow that kind of thing.
That's what's so marvelous, lovey. The middle class believes they're going to be billionaires someday.
Well, anything's possible in America.
Oh, your naivete is so charming, my love. The fact is, the gap between them and us is getting wider all the time. W's our boy.
Bush Economics. More than just a three-hour tour. Paid for by BillionairesForBush.com.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Do you have a dust mask? Well, if you use a bagless vacuum and you're sensitive to dust, a leading consumer magazine products testing magazine warns you should wear a dust mask. But here's a better idea. Try my newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. It uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. Try emptying a bagless vacuum and see what happens. Dust gets all over your hands and face and back into the room and on the kitchen counter. And you get to breathe it in? I believe a vacuum should capture the dust, not your lungs. That's why with my Auric XL, the filter bags are self-sealing. What goes in the bag stays in the bag, even when you empty it. So try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Then if you still want a bagless vacuum, I'll send you a dust mask to...
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. The PBGC was created in 1974 to ensure protected or defined benefit plans, which are a dying breed because workers receive a guaranteed amount of money regardless of their company's investment performance. Most workers are now offered 401k plans, which are not insured and based on the whims of the stock market. Douglas Elliott is president and author of the Coffee Report.
Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation was set up like the FDIC to guarantee bank deposits. The PBGC guarantees that if you are promised a pension, that company goes bankrupt, and there's not enough money in the pension fund, you'll still get the pension.
U.S. Airways announced on Sunday it was returning to bankruptcy for the second time after having already terminated the pilot's pension plan. And now it's revealed intentions to terminate the pensions for all of its other labor union employees.
There's a limit on how much is guaranteed. One of the limitations is that no more than, I think, $44,000 a year of pension will be guaranteed. And there are people in these unions that will earn pensions greater than that. The amount in excess of that limit, they will not receive.
In principle, corporations are required to contribute enough money to the PBGC to cover all future pension payments. But employers are getting around their obligations by abusing flexibility on the timing of their contributions.
There needs to be a different balance, either less risk being taken on or more premiums to offset that risk. And it was kind of masked in the 90s when everybody was seeming to do much better than they really were. And stock prices were high, which helped pension funds that invested in stocks. And it also made it less likely that companies would go bankrupt.
Elliott says that to date, American corporations have promised their employees more than $1.5 trillion worth of pension payments. And if they can't pay out, the burden falls on the PBGC and ultimately the U.S. taxpayer. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment, our regular Friday afternoon program. Bernie, we've got, Ann in Sarasota, Florida on line three. Let's go to Paul in Santa Fe. He's been holding for a while on line one there. Paul in Santa Fe, you're live with Congressman Sanders. Then we'll go to Ann if we have the time here.
Yes, hi. Greetings to you both. Bernie, I wanted to ask if you ever saw, I just ran across it, it's a March NBC article stating that in 2002 and 2003, on three separate occasions, the Pentagon drew up what they call airtight attack plans to kill Abu Zarqawi, who, as we are hearing, is maybe literally behind many of the killings now in Iraq. And on all three occasions, the White House declined to go forward with the attack because they were worried about it undercutting their case for war against Saddam.
This being the Bush White House.
This being the Bush White House.
Right, okay. Paul, thanks.
Actually, it's interesting, but I'm not familiar with that.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Paul. Let's go to Ann in Sarasota, Florida on line three here. Hey, Ann, welcome to the program.
Hi, I was wondering if either of you caught any of Kerry's speech this morning that he made. Pretty condemning of Bush and his handling of Iraq and the al-Qaeda threat. And that what he's done is actually made al-Qaeda more of a threat to the U.S. We're not safer, we're less safe.
Well, I didn't see the speech, but, you know, that's kind of the point that I was making earlier, and a point that many people believe. The real danger to the world is al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, they are seeing a proliferation of cells all over the world. And one of the things that they are doing, they are using George Bush as a poster child and American presence in Iraq to fan anti-American extremism. And I think that Kerry is right when he makes that point.
He's got pretty strong in his points. I was actually very surprised because Kerry's been so far, but he brought out all the big guns today on that. He was talking about even open borders like with Mexico and stuff and that we're not safe and that Bush isn't securing that. They're not doing enough to get enough police force on the streets and all the things that Kerry's just said that Bush is just telling you you're safer, but he's not doing anything to back it up. And when you
spend $200 billion fighting the war in Iraq, that means that there is less money for first responders, less money for police and fire officers, and less money to do the things that we have to do to adequately protect the American people. That's true.
Yeah, and that's what it's come down to. And thanks for the call, Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us today. It is always such an honor and a pleasure to have you on this program. We'll see you next week. We'll talk to you next week, Friday.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Broadcasting live, by the way, today from Portland, Oregon. We'll be back in Vermont, People's Republic of Vermont, next Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in...
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. What's bad for American fans is a score for Europeans. More than 150 recently locked out National Hockey League players have signed up to play in the European leagues until they get a new contract. Last week, owners locked out these players, saying their previous collective bargaining agreement was too costly. But the NHL Players Union is opposing a proposed salary cap. 47 NHL players went to the Czech League, 33 to the Russian League, and 30 to the Swedish League.
With contract negotiations basically at a deadlock, AFGE union leaders for Social Security Administration employees see only one option left: wait it out and see if the American people vote in a labor-friendly administration. Witold Spurczynski, co-chief negotiator for the SSA national contract, said that the agency has launched a full-scale assault and is trying to remove and reduce scores of benefits. Spurczynski said the SSA isn't the only branch of government being targeted.
This is being orchestrated by the Bush administration. We noticed that in other AFGE units that are in contract negotiations, their agencies are proposing similar language to strip their contracts of many of the benefits that employees have enjoyed over the years.
Spurczynski added that the only solution available if bargaining remains at a deadlock is to bring the dispute to the Federal Services Impasses Panel, a body he claims is made up of mostly anti-union Bush appointees. The negotiations, already into their 11th week, are scheduled to end by the end of November. Spurczynski said SSA officials know that the panel would most likely rule in favor of management, so the AFGE has little leverage.
I think the key element that may affect the bargaining is the election. I think if Senator Kerry wins the election, we would expect that, you know, once he becomes president, that he would have a different attitude about labor relations in the federal sector than President Bush.
An Israeli public worker general strike is costing the economy there $300 million a day. 300,000 workers are striking because 20,000 union members haven't been paid in months. Government officials won't pay up, even though they have the money, until the union accepts a program that would cut wages and cause hundreds of layoffs. The strike has shut down planes, trains, the stock exchange, banks, and post offices. Here's today's Dow Bob report. All wages are not created equal in the U.S., but now data shows that even within groups of workers with similar education and experience, there's growing wage inequity. The Economic Policy Institute's State of Working America says most of the growth of wage inequality since 1979 has been driven driven by the growth of this within-group wage inequity. This wasn't happening from 1995 to 2000. The trend seems to contradict the idea that technology has generated greater wage inequalities by creating greater skill and education differences.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There, there.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
Poor Richard. Richard Perle is a right-wing neocon theorist who wants to be taken seriously as both a governmental and corporate insider. But he keeps taking highly public pratfalls that would be absolutely comical if they weren't so ugly. Perle, who's tight with Dick Cheney and Donnie Rumsfeld, was one of the main architects of George W.'s disastrous policies in Iraq. He was the chief proponent of the fanciful notion that our invading troops would be greeted by grateful people tossing rose petals at them. Instead, angry Iraqis are tossing bombs, and more than 1,000 of our troops are dead. Richard is not doing any better in the corporate world. His latest pratfall is as a board member of Hollinger International, a media conglomerate that owns such papers as the Chicago Sun-Times and Jerusalem Post. The head honcho of Hollinger, Lord Conrad Black, now stands accused of having looted some $400 million from the corporation. Perle was not merely on the board, but on the executive committee, with a direct fiduciary responsibility to protect the interests of the shareholders. But this supposed watchdog was Lord Black's lapdog. Perle admits that he personally rubber-stamped stacks of financial documents involving Black's looting, signing the papers without even reading them. One reason that Perle was so head-in-the-sand irresponsible is that he was enjoying the corporate gravy, too. In a sweetheart deal, he directed a Hollinger division that let him pocket $3 million, even though this division lost $49 million on Perle's watch. But Richard now claims that he's a victim. After Lord Black's corporate kleptocracy was exposed, and after an internal report nailed Perle for his flagrant abdication of duty, Richard loudly proclaimed to the media that he had been duped by his former friend and benefactor. This is Jim Hightower saying, poor Richard, I guess he was duped into putting those millions into his own pockets, too.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet from radiopower.org, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org and at tomhartman.com. You can both find archives of the program as well as our live chat room where you can drop in and have a conversation with some of the most thoughtful and erudite folks on the entire Internet. Speaking of thoughtful, erudite, and the Internet, what, of course, immediately comes to mind is Salon.com. And I'm very pleased to have with us today Sydney Blumenthal, the Washington Bureau Chief for Salon.com. Sydney, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
Oh, pleased to have you. You have written some really great stuff. Your most recent piece, people can find on Salon.com, The Bubble Boy, about George Bush living in his own strange little world. You tell us a little bit about that?
Well, here is Bush now, who tells the world that everything is okay, that we should be optimistic, that he's established a new definition of security, and that our own intelligence agencies are just guessing when they provide him with analysis and information that the situation is grim in Iraq.
Well, they were apparently just guessing before.
He's Secretary General of the United Nations, who calls for the rule of law. He blows off the CIA. He blows off our own military, which our CENTCOM commander now says that we need more troops. All of this is just in the name of a rosy scenario, which, of course, serves his larger political interest. He is engaged in a kind of mind cure, as though if you say every day in every way I'm getting better and better, it will happen, and that reality will somehow dissolve, or that people won't even face it and just simply vote for him, and as though this make-believe world were true.
Yeah, who was the French the guy who came up with that back about 60, 70 years ago, wasn't it? I'm drawing a blank.
It was one of the cults of the 1920s, of the
right.
roaring
right.
20s, a guy named Emile Coué.
That's right, Coué.
I
knew it started with C.
It was part of an early power of positive thinking cult. If you said, every day in every way I'm getting better and better, and you said that to yourself, you would.
Right, and you know, there's
policy.
Some... Yeah, and there's probably, on a personal level, some truth to that. But, Sidney Blumenthal, how is Bush's today telling us overtly that he doesn't really believe his own intelligence service any different than his before not believing some of the intelligence that was coming back that indicated from, for example, Hans Blix, you know, and Mohammed al-Baradei saying, we don't find any evidence of weapons of mass destruction here. How is it any different? I mean, isn't this just kind of a continuation of Bush does what Bush wants and the rest of us can just take a leap?
Well, Bush dismisses all of the professional views within the government, whether it's the senior officer corps of the military or our intelligence agencies. He tries to force them to produce material that fits his preconceived ideas and his already packaged decisions. The decision-making process is not driven by information. It is not driven by facts. It is driven by Bush's already preconceived ideas of what he's already going to do. And if you don't serve them, then you're dismissed, whether you are the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and that did happen to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and also to the general of the Army, Eric Shinseki, who said we'd need double the troops in Iraq.
Right.
And he was essentially cashiered.
And his lead economic advisor
CIA
as well. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, right on. And his what was the guy who was the head of his lead economic advisor? Lawrence Lindsay, was it?
That's correct. The head of the Council on Economic Advisors was thrown out of his administration because he made the error of telling the truth that the tax cuts weren't going to pay for themselves and that would create a deficit.
Yeah. We're talking with Sidney Blumenthal, the Washington correspondent for Salon.com, Salon, the online, extraordinary online publication. I'm a premium subscriber. I think it's just a great resource. Our telephone number 1-866-889-8894 if you have a question for Sidney Blumenthal or would like to get into this conversation. And in fact, we've got Jerry in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on line one here. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Your comment, question, remark, Jerry?
My point is about the alleged CBS documents, which have, of course, not been proven inauthentic. They've just not been absolutely proven authentic. And one point being that Bush has never come forth with any proof of his own that he actually did these things. What he did say was that he got his position not by influence, My question then is when, and even more important, why did former Lieutenant Governor Ben Barnes become the Invisible Man, from what he said on this show?
Yeah, good question. Jerry, thanks for the call. What are your thoughts on that, Sydney?
I think that the CBS documents issue is a, you know, reflects on the an error on CBS's part, but it's a diversion. And the story is that that Bush never fulfilled his military obligation. That is the truth. Those are the facts. Bush has never shown that he ever showed up for his missing years. He certainly got his position in the Champaign unit of the Texas Air National Guard through influence, as Ben Barnes exactly has said. His story has been consistent throughout the years, by the way. He's only decided to come forward and tape it for TV. There's no doubt that Bush got his position through the political influence of his family, and that he got out of the Guard, having gotten into a lot of trouble and not shown up and not fulfilled his duty and not received all of his credits through the influence of his family.
Yeah, and to the extent that this is an issue or not an issue, it's amazing how successfully I wrote a piece for Common Dreams earlier this week in which I just pointed out this issue is toast. I mean, the conservatives have taken this issue from now on. Whenever anybody on the left, as it were, or any opponent of George Bush tries to raise the issue of his guard service, the automatic four-word mantra is going to be those documents were forged. And you know, it's going to create a collective amnesia, in my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. What do you think, Sydney? You think this is the end of that issue?
I think it has been to this point, but I think that new information could reopen it. There's supposed to be new documents released in the AP suit. A federal court judge ordered all of the military documents in Bush's file to be made public on the 24th of September, which is today. And if not, then by the 29th, the court demands that the administration make clear why not. So we'll see if there are new documents. But I believe that this issue is important because it shows that Bush is a son of privilege above all others, and that this is a consistent pattern throughout his life, in his business career, and in his political career, including to the point where he is made president by a Supreme Court that includes appointees from his father.
Right, who did not recuse himself.
This is a consistent pattern all the way from the Guard to becoming president. It shows disdain for small d democracy, and it relates to how he views this war. Remember the kind of sacrifice that he called. It's for others in the military to pay. He called on Americans after 9/11 to go shopping. He didn't call on the country to not have tax giveaways to the wealthy. Now we have, you know, huge deficits. He did not call upon young people, all young people, regardless of class, to serve our country through national service. None of
well, at the very
programs.
Least, he didn't say, listen, we've got this problem in the part of the world where oil is coming from, and it seems to be paid for with our oil dollars to Saudi Arabia, who funded the Wahhabists, who, you know, led to Osama, blah-de-blah-de-blah, not to mention our funding, but that's a whole other argument. We got this problem in the Middle East. We can perhaps resolve it in some small way if you would just stop consuming quite so much gasoline. So let's all drive a little slower. Let's buy more fuel-efficient cars. Let's turn down our thermostats. I mean, you know, some of the Jimmy Carter conversation. I mean, very simple, straightforward stuff that actually had to do with the issue.
Environmental agenda. He has trashed the idea of national energy independence, and instead he's gone whole hog to make us dependent on foreign oil, which gives the Saudis the whip hand, and he has suppressed those parts of Senate Intelligence Committee report, which showed, according to Senator Bob Graham, that there was official Saudi government links to two of the hijackers on 9/11. Why would he do that? Why would his administration do it? There could be reasons of realpolitik. You don't want to offend the Saudis. But there are deeper ties, as we know, between the House of Bush and the House of Saud.
Yeah, extensive, deep, long, decades old. Sidney Blumenthal, the Washington bureau chief for Salon.com. Sidney, we started out. You were talking about Bush kind of living in this bubble and thinking that he's entitled and he doesn't have to pay attention to advisors who disagree with him. In fact, he openly dismisses them and disregards them and fires them. Do you think that this is, on the one hand, part of a cynical, perhaps even Machiavellian, strategy to promote a particular agenda, or do you think that this is a psychological foible, let's say, that causes him not to be able to hear contrarian views and reconsider positions, or both?
I think that Bush's refusal to accept responsibility for the consequences of his own actions, whether it is refusing to take a physical in the Texas Air National Guard, which grounds him, and which he then flees to Alabama without permission and doesn't show up at the guard for a year, whether it's that when he was a young man or now, whether it's Abu Ghraib and he refuses to fire Rumsfeld, or whether it's refusing to accept responsibility for what's required in Iraq after he has invaded this country and then systematically committed blunder after blunder, refusing to listen to the Department of State, the wiser people in the Department of Defense in our military, to our people at our war colleges and to our intelligence agencies, and fires nobody. All of this you can talk about, if you like, as a psychological problem, but it's a political problem for the country. Because
right.
We have a president who refuses to accept that we need correction and that...
Yeah, we have a president who refuses to accept responsibility, yeah. That's ultimately the bottom line. Stick around. Sidney Blumenthal with the Salon.com. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. And if you own one, they advise you to wear a dust mask. I would never put the Orrick name on a bagless vacuum. They're filthy. My hypoallergenic Orrick XL uses triple-walled, disposable filter bags. They hold four times more than the leading brand of bagless vacuums. What goes in the Orrick bag stays in the bag, including bacteria and viruses. Empty a bagless vacuum, and the dust goes right back into the room you've just cleaned. Is this sanitary? Orrick cleans the air as it vacuums the floor. Try my 8-pound Orrick XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. It's the clean alternative to bagless vacuum.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.com.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit.
So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost it.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Portland, Oregon, with Rama Schneider and Ira Gravatt ably engineering the program back in the People's Republic of Vermont. Funny little noise on the line there. Well, we'll see what happened. Anyway, we're talking with Sidney Blumenthal, who's the Washington Bureau Chief for Salon.com, and 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Paul in Florida is on line one. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Sidney?
I'm right here.
Yeah, you need to get the latest article from William Rivers Pitt about truthout.org, and the title of it is Your Media is Killing You. And if you read the article, you will see that General Electric owns Spitball, MSNBC, NBC, and their pro-war stance of 8-1 on average is obvious after you figure out that General Electric owns it, and the biggest independent individual investor of AOL Time Warner, which owns CNN, is a Saudi. And then it gets into detail about the Rendon Group. That seems to be the latest Hill and Knowlton out of Washington that got paid $200 million to promote going into the Middle East after 9/11. And it was created by the CIA and the Pentagon.
Okay, Paul, thanks for the call. Your you know, interesting point. Sidney, what are your thoughts on this, the state of our media here?
I think that part of the problem with the media right now is that it's been intimidated by the Bush administration. And it pulls its punches. There's a systematic effort to attack anybody who doesn't do that. I know of many, many people in Washington in the press corps who have received calls from the Bush White House or have had corporate executives or news executives called when they've done anything that's interpreted at all is critical. Now, I know I served in the Clinton White House. We never did that. This is something that is the complete usual MO of the Bush White House is its intimidation.
Yeah, right on down the line. Do you think that to what extent do you think the corporate ownership of our media, particularly by corporations who are involved in the weapons industry, for example, like General Electric with NBC, influences the kind of coverage and the kind of news that we're getting?
Oh, I don't think it's so direct. I think it may be some long-term indirect influence. But certainly, there's a lot at stake economically, and it doesn't need to be stated. There are billions and billions in contracts and in regulation involved for large media corporations that, but, you know, none of that prevented them from, you know, trashing the Clinton White House. But who were they serving then? The Republican
Sure.
Congress. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that there are deeper pathologies at work in the press corps than simply corporate ownership.
Yeah, not the least of which being people getting, you know, very high salaries and being very afraid of losing very, very good jobs. Let's go to Ann from Michigan on line three here. Hey, Ann, welcome to the program. We've only got about a minute left.
Hi. I just wanted to say that part of the reason that George Bush doesn't accept responsibility for his actions is his past history of his alcoholism. And, you know,
you think it's the dry drunk syndrome?
Do not accept responsibility, and you're never really cured.
Okay, Sydney, your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I wouldn't want to comment on that sort of thing, but I would say that Bush has a pattern from the from his earliest days of failing to accept responsibility, and it is one of the hallmarks of his policies today across the board. It is at the heart of his presidency, his failure
personally, corporately,
responsibility,
business-wise, government. Yeah, right across the board. Sydney Blumenthal, thank you so much for being with us. You can read Sydney Blumenthal's writings on Salon.com. Sydney, thanks. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
With the election looming, George W. is back to claiming that he's a compassionate conservative. And as evidence, he cites his centerpiece education law, the No Child Left Behind Act. This is supposed to be a tough love reform, compelling all public school kids to pass standardized tests. If the kids fail the federal government's strict tests, they'll be held back, and their schools can lose federal funding and be replaced by corporate-run chain schools. But instead of tough love, Bush's law actually is a tough luck scam, for he has callously refused to fund the reform part. To get Congress to approve the law, he had agreed to put up tax dollars for smaller classes, special teachers, tutors, educational equipment, and other resources needed for schools to improve the ability of our kids to learn and pass Bush's tests. He reneged. In this year's presidential budget proposal, George shorts his own No Child Left Behind reform by $9 billion. That's on top of $17 billion he withheld in his previous two budgets. In fact, this spring, Bush offered more of our tax dollars in the form of a bribe to try to get the government of Turkey to send some troops to Iraq than he has offered to all of America's school districts to implement his federally mandated education law. By so severely shortchanging our public schools, the Bushites can advance their ideological agenda of school privatization. As more and more schools lack the resources to achieve the passing rates required on the mandated tests, a little-known provision in Georgia's law will kick in, one that encourages states to privatize schools that fail his testing system. This is Jim Hightower saying, lest you assume that private schools will be better, thus more compassionate, recent data from Bush's own education department now reveals that children in such schools are doing worse academically than those who are in our public system. Georgia's reform is not about compassion, it's about profits.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror. My wife's still in bed. And this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Our outrage of the day, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld speaking to the Senate Armed Services Committee raised the possibility, get this, that Iraqi elections might exclude insecure parts of the country. It's like, you know, hey, let's have a national election here, but let's not include Georgia or Texas or Massachusetts or, well, in fact, here's, to put it in Rumsfeld's words, actually quote Don Rumsfeld, let's say you tried to have an election and you could have it in three quarters or four fifths of the country, he said. Well, so be it. Nothing's perfect in life. Yeah, and this is going to be an election that's going to be recognized, accepted, bought into by the Iraqi. These guys are living in fantasy land. This is such a disaster for America, this administration, and the way that they've been prosecuting this war, and the way that they've been conducting themselves all around the world. It is an embarrassment to Americans. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. On line one, we have Scott from Glorieta, New Mexico. Am I pronouncing that right, Scott?
Very well said. Rama and I had a bet that you would not be able to pronounce that.
I wonder what the bet was. Well, never mind. Let's not go there. Okay, what's up, Scott?
Okay. Well, you know, we were just taking another look at, first of all, to say about Donald Rumsfeld's plans for the election. It sounds like the election here in 2000. Say we don't count Broward County. Say we don't count a million African Americans. Nothing's perfect in life.
Yep, there you go. Nothing's perfect. And not only that, the Republicans in the House of Representatives in Florida, when the recount was happening, you know, they took James Baker's line and said, even if the recount shows that Gore won, we're going to send Republican electors to Washington, D.C., and this state is going to vote for George W. Bush. No. I mean, they just came right out and said it.
I like that. What I wanted to talk about was when you and Sydney were talking about the media and how it influences perception on the electorate. We were just, again, always bringing this up, but I just can't get over how powerful this film is. We were looking at Hijacking Catastrophe last night. And what they consistently talk about is, you know, the sort of fetishism, the militarization of the culture via the media talking about, like, the F-16 Tomcat or whatever it is can drop this many bombs. It can go this fast, and there was a reporter talking about how he was involved.
Yeah, isn't it cool? It's a toys for boys thing. I mean, a lot of these reporters just get sucked right into it.
Well, and I think the part of it, though, that was reminds me of how the media has changed since the Vietnam era. When we were looking at casualties night in and night out, they show these devastating photos. It was so difficult to watch of the injuries on the ground. Who's on the other end of that Tomcat? We get the embedded end where you see the munitions flying off into the night like some video game. And what they're getting every day, you know, whether they're walking down the street or if they have electricity and can turn on their TV, they're seeing the casualties day in and day out.
Yeah.
I mean, you just look at one photo of this kid who is basically in pieces in the hospital, and you think about the Arab world seeing those images on top of Abu Ghraib, et cetera, and it is poster recruitment for Al-Qaeda and extreme.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Scott. Scott, I agree with you. Thanks for the call. I've got to move along here, but, absolutely. And Hijacking Catastrophe was a brilliant movie. I was, it was fascinating to watch it the other day. Victoria Jones from Talk Radio News Service is on with our daily report from Washington, D.C. Ira, when you pop Victoria on, why don't you push the VIP button? And Victoria, if it's okay with you, we've got another caller on hold. Do you mind if we bring Wes in first?
No.
Absolutely.
Okay. And but by the way, welcome, Victoria. I'm here in Portland, Oregon. You're in Washington, D.C. We're being mixed through a board there in the People's Republic of Vermont. And Wes is in Crescent City, California, on line three. Hey, Wes, what's up?
I just think the Cary people are missing a good opportunity by not using the one word that I think they should use, and that is mission creep. We invaded. They can use that against Bush. We invaded for weapons of mass destruction, and now to justify our reason for being there, we're saying we're there to give them, the people, democracy.
Yeah.
And Cary can use that.
And this is actually, I agree with you, Wes, and this is actually the 23rd different rationale that has been presented by this administration. Wes, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Victoria, is this thing going to fly? I mean, do you think that the Democrats are going to make any traction, any serious traction out of you know, what Wes correctly refers to as mission creep, although I'm not sure that the average American is going to, you know, that phrase is going to be a big, you know, boing for people. What do you think?
Well, at the moment, I'd probably say no, because it seems as though people do not want to give up, and I can understand this, do not want to give up the belief that President Bush is stronger on the war on terror and is making the right decisions in Iraq, because there seems to be a huge psychological jump that you have to make within yourself once you say, if you thought that he was, and if you now aren't sure, once you say that he's not sure, you're giving up a sense of security that you've created within yourself, being very psychological here, over the last 3 years, and I think that's going to be difficult for people to do.
Well, I think at some level, people want to have just a fundamental faith in American democracy and believe that their leaders are going to tell them the truth.
I think that Cary has quite a jump to convince them that they're not being told the truth, and he hasn't got very long to do it in, and he's basically got next Thursday night.
Yeah, but he's starting to do it more aggressively.
He certainly is. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's happening in Washington, D.C.?
Well, it's fairly quiet today, obviously, with Yom Kippur. The city pretty much closed down yesterday. Congress finished late after the whole tax cut vote that it had in the House and the Senate last night. Now, you're much smarter than I am, Tom. I don't understand these tax cut votes. Apparently aimed at the middle class. Apparently also a whole load of business tax breaks.
$13 billion worth.
I don't even know what that
billion.
Means.
Yeah, well, it's corporate welfare and pork and whatnot to the tune of $13 billion in corporate tax breaks, and then they basically throw a bone to the middle class. I mean,
everybody wants to be able to go home, and I think, you know, Washington's being quite honest about this behind the scenes. They want to be able to go home and say they voted for tax cuts. Very few people are in safe enough districts where they feel able to say, no, I voted against it, they voted for things they don't believe in.
Yeah, and not only that, the level of doublespeak is mind-boggling. Don Nichols, who is the Republican from, I forget where he's from, somewhere out
Oklahoma,
in the middle,
I think,
Oklahoma, there you go, yeah. GOP Senator Don Nichols, he's talking about the Earned Income Tax Credit program, which is where if your income is like so low that you're like below the poverty level or deeply into the poverty level, and yet you're working your butt off trying to get your family going, you actually get a little bit of money back from the government. That is, because you're paying so many other kinds of taxes. You're paying sales tax, you're paying property taxes, you're paying payroll tax, you're paying, you know, you may not be paying income tax. And so he comes out and he says, this program is riddled with abuse. So in other words, the tax program that helps poor people in the United States, that's an abusive program. But at the same time, he's pushing through $13 billion in tax cuts for the largest corporations in America, who now only pay 15% of the total tax burden in this country, whereas back, you know, in the 50s and 60s, and, well, from the 30s forward, it was 50%. And it's just, I'm running out of adjectives.
It is mind-boggling. There aren't any adjectives at a certain point to describe.
It's criminal.
The things. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, it's criminal. It is anti-American. Anti-democratic. Okay. So, Victoria, what else is playing in Washington? Do you think that the whole topic of George W. and his service records is now dead as a result of this Rathergate thing?
Yes, at least temporarily. I mean, basically, anything you know, because of the Rathergate thing, any possibility of focusing on the questions that the Rather story raised, very legitimate questions. Has gone away, and all most people are going to be left with is thinking that CBS put on a bogus story.
Yeah. So from now on, whenever anybody says George Bush was a deserter, the response is going to be those documents were forged.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's been hugely damaging, I think, to the Democrats beyond what it's done to Rather. And I think there's also a sense among some people that somehow the Democrats were involved.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's going to play out at the polls, but this whole thing has really been very bad for the Democrats. Obviously, appalling for Dan Rather, who I don't know if he'll survive it or not. He probably will. But
I think
it's going to be very hard to raise questions about President Bush's lack of service.
Yeah, and this is why I think that Karl Rove or Mr. Stone were involved in this thing, because this is just a classic old-time Rovian technique, you know, like from bugging his own office to alleged to have sent the tapes of Bush's prep work for his debate with Al Gore to the Gore campaign and all, you know, deflect the issue, accuse the people of what you're doing, you know. Victoria, one last thing while you're still on the line. The Republican Party yesterday, this article today in the New York Times by David Kirkpatrick, the Republican Party yesterday acknowledged sending mass mailings to residents of two states warning that liberals seek to ban the Bible as part of its efforts to mobilize religious voters for President Bush. Honest to goodness, I'm telling you, this is the truth. The Republican Party has now acknowledged that the official party sent these things out to voters in two states saying, if you vote for liberals, they're going to ban the Bible. Is there any, what's happening, is anybody in Washington, I mean, I would think people would be spinning, flipping out about this.
People are flipping out about it, but there's also a kind of sense of that this is a logical progression of the other kinds of outrageous things that have been said and done in this campaign. It was all, you know, I mean, I don't know what the next thing is that's going to be claimed that if they elect the liberals, whoever they are actually, because most liberals don't own up to it anymore. People aren't surprised. They are kind of surprised, I think, that the Republicans are owning to it.
Yeah, interesting.
But not that it happened. Nothing surprises them anymore.
Yeah,
it's astonishing.
It is. It truly is. Yep. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, I've got another caller here. You want to hang on and take this call? Okay. George on line one here. George W. in North Carolina. George W. in North Carolina is on the line. Hey, George W.
Yeah, this is George W.
Okay.
Passing through North Carolina, I thought I'd give you guys a call.
All righty.
I wanted to address the rumors that Mr. Kerry is spreading about me not caring about the common man.
Oh, this is the real George W. I'm impressed. Okay.
This is not true.
You do care about the average man, huh?
Yes. First of all, you got to understand the problem. People that make below $200,000 are not really people.
I see. They're holograms.
They're what Dick Cheney calls lowlifes.
John Adams used to call them the rabble.
That's them.
Yeah.
But we have a plan to help these lowlifes out.
And that is?
The common man, his biggest bill is his mortgage payment.
Yes.
And what me and my buddies at Halliburton have come up with is the coolest thing y'all see it. We're going to send a railroad train through each town. And on one car, it's going to be this big Play-Doh factory. It's going to squirt out a 12-foot-wide tube, and this big knife comes down and cuts them off. Whack, whack, whack. You don't see it. It's so cool. And you have an instant mud hut.
It's
going to give everybody that makes below $200,000 a mud hut.
There you go.
And they won't have any more of these problems with their home bills.
Yeah.
And that way, we will be able to compete with China.
Okay, a chicken in every pot. George W.
We're looking for a way to do that.
Yeah, George W., thanks for the call, and I hope you'll call us again with your next brilliant suggestion. Raymond in Cement City, Michigan's on the line, and Victoria, you want to stick around for another minute?
Sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Raymond in Cement City, Michigan on line three. Hey, Raymond, welcome to the program.
Well, can you hear me well? Some of the callers are kind of low audio out there, so
I can hear you just fine.
Listen, I think the big news story that is of interest to me is the fact that as I understand it, the Congress has decided that they're going to move the Office of Cybersecurity into the White House as opposed to some other federal agency. It seems to me like we're giving the keys to the chicken coop to the fox and locking us out of the chicken coop. I mean, that seems pretty dangerous. I think the thing that I'm more concerned about, I mean, we've got a lot of issues that are really draconian in terms of the economy and Iraq and all that. But our ability to maintain the democracy through open communications, and then we end up with all the keys to getting into personal communications and
right. Not to mention the alternative media. I mean, this is the alternative media. Victoria, how's that playing in Washington, D.C.?
I have to confess I didn't know, so I can't tell you how it's playing.
Yeah, I don't have the details on it.
I do not know. I didn't know that that's happening. It's it doesn't sound right to me that it should be being moved in there. It doesn't make any sense. There's plenty of office space.
Yeah, Raymond, we'll keep our eyes out on that one. Thanks for the call and for alerting us to that. I appreciate it. And we'll see if we can track down the details of that and report back on you.
That's a little odd to you.
Yeah, and yet it's not inconsistent with what these guys have been up to. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, thanks so much for being with us today, Victoria.
Thank you.
Have a great afternoon. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Stick around, we'll be right back with you. It's your light at the end of the tunnel of Talk Radio.
Want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me for a short talk and book signing on Monday, September 27th at the Barnes & Noble in South Burlington, Vermont. I'll be discussing my current book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. Now, more than ever, citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president. If we are to continue being the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles. For more information, call BNN Burlington at 802-864-8001. That's 802-864-8001.
This is what Ralph Nader has to say about embryonic stem cell research. That's right, not a word. John Kerry has vowed to lift the Bush administration's stifling restrictions, restrictions that could be cruelly delaying cures and treatments. Why the silence? Maybe Ralph Nader worries you might not like what he has to say. Or maybe he just doesn't care. The Committee for Advancement of Stem Cell Research approved this message. It was not approved by any candidate or any candidate's committee. Visit CASCR.org.
A group hopes to persuade the federal government to drain a huge reservoir in Utah. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. When the Glen Canyon Dam was completed in 1966, it created Lake Powell, a vast reservoir stretching 186 miles from the dam in northern Arizona up through southeastern Utah. The project was controversial from the start because it submerged the scenic Glen Canyon, and it's still generating controversy today. A group of activists at the Glen Canyon Institute want to breach the dam, drain the reservoir, and let the Colorado River run free. Chip Ward writes about the effort in his new book, Hope's Horizon. He says the proposal offered in 1996 was first seen as outrageous.
Well, as it turns out, that proposal to drain Lake Powell makes an awful lot of sense. For one thing, Lake Powell traps huge amounts of sediment that have radically transformed the ecosystem downstream in the Grand Canyon. The reservoir drowned at one of the most beautiful canyon systems in the country, probably more beautiful than any national park that we have set aside. And even as a means of storing water, the lake, when it reached its fullest level, was seeing more evaporation off the surface area than water that was coming in.
Lake Powell loses 22 billion cubic feet of water to evaporation each year. Ward says that's become a critical issue.
Of course, at this point, because of this prolonged drought that we're experiencing in the West, Lake Powell has started to drain itself. It's actually down below half of its capacity at this point, and canyons that we have not seen for 20 years are suddenly reemerging from the lake and are accessible again.
The Glen Canyon proposal faces enormous resistance from Utah politicians as well as marina owners and other economic interests around Lake Powell. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
And welcome back. Happy Friday, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom. Greetings, Tom Hartman back here with you. And with you, just as an FYI, one of the great talk radio talents in the United States, Rama Schneider, is going to be taking over the next hour of our program. For those of you who are listening to stations that carry the third hour of our show, I'm here in Portland, Oregon, as they say, and I've got to go off and give a speech here in a few minutes. So, Rama is nobly and ably going to step in, and I'm sure you're going to find it fascinating. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Margaret from Mont, Vermont, on line one. Is that right, Margaret?
It's Montpelier, Vermont. Yes.
Oh, Montpelier. Okay, I was wondering. It's M O N T. Gee. Welcome, Margaret. What's up?
Well, I'd actually called to listen to you and Bernie, but I'm hoping you might have some insight. There's been a lot of talk here on the local DEV talk radio about this draft possibility and the bills that are in Congress.
Yep.
And my question is, what chances do people really think there are of a draft happening if Bush is reelected?
I can tell you, if Bush gets elected, I wouldn't say reelected, but if he gets elected, then I'd say the probabilities are very, very high. On the other hand, if Kerry gets elected, I think it's pretty unlikely.
And that's pretty much what we're talking about around here. I've got two kids in that age bracket, and one who will be old enough to be drafted if it happens, but he's not old enough to vote against Bush. And I think they're going to leave. I think they both will leave if that happens.
Yeah. This is a difficult time for the United States. This is a real time of crisis, and it's a crisis that didn't have to happen. It's been brought about by failed leadership, by our being lied to by this guy. I mean, it's a tragedy. Margaret, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Thanks for calling. 1-866-889-8894. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, Tom. A real quick point that not a lot of people seem to be taking to heart.
If al-Sistani says there's not going to be national elections in Iraq, what Bush says or Alawi says or Rumsfeld says will mean absolutely nothing, and al-Sistani has already indicated that he might rule against voting if he feels it's not done properly. That's going to be the breaker point right there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He, you know, two-thirds of the population are Shiites, and solidly half of them will do absolutely anything Sistani says, and the other half will, you know, probably pretty much go along with it. So, good point, Chris. Well made. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. So much going on here. This thing, the Republican Party yesterday acknowledging that they sent out a mass mailing saying that liberals are going to ban the Bible, which this is so outrageous. You know, these guys, they really don't think they can win unless they lie to people and terrify people. The Republican Party, the party that I once respected, has become the party of terror. If functionally, they've become terrorists. They're trying to terrorize people for political purposes. This is wrong. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman here with you. I'll be back next week. Rama Schneider coming up in the next hour. Thanks for joining us today.
It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
A criminal investigation is underway over Halliburton's $180 million payment to Nigerian officials for a natural gas project back when Dick Cheney was the CEO. Critics call this bribery, but in many countries, bribes are just part of the political culture. Why should Dick's company be punished for being sensitive to local customs? You give money to politicians and they give favors to you. We do it all the time here in the U.S., only we call it a campaign contribution, and no one seems to object. South of the border, it's la mordita, the little bite, and in the Middle East, it's bakshish. No matter what you call it, it's smart business. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. What's bad for American fans is a score for Europeans. More than 150 recently locked out National Hockey League players have signed up to play in the European leagues until they get a new contract. Last week, owners locked out these players, saying their previous collective bargaining agreement was too costly. But the NHL Players Union is opposing a proposed salary cap. 47 NHL players went to the Czech League, 33 to the Russian League, and 30 to the Swedish League.
With contract negotiations basically at a deadlock, AFGE union leaders for Social Security Administration employees see only one option left: wait it out and see if the American people vote in a labor-friendly administration. Witold Sferchinski, co-chief negotiator for the SSA national contract, said that the agency has launched a full-scale assault and is trying to remove and reduce scores of benefits. Sferchinski said the SSA isn't the only branch of government being targeted.
This is being orchestrated by the Bush administration. We noticed that in other AFGE units that are in contract negotiations, their agencies are proposing similar language to strip their contracts of many of the benefits that employees have enjoyed over the years.
Sferchinski added that the only solution available if bargaining remains at a deadlock is to bring the dispute to the Federal Services Impasses Panel, a body he claims is made up of mostly anti-union Bush appointees. The negotiations, already into their 11th week, are scheduled to end by the end of November. Sferchinski said SSA officials know that the panel would most likely rule in favor of management, so the AFGE has little leverage.
I think the key element that may affect the bargaining is the election. I think if Senator Kerry wins the election, we would expect that, you know, once he becomes president, that he would have a different attitude about labor relations in the federal sector than President Bush.
An Israeli public worker general strike is costing the economy there $300 million a day. 300,000 workers are striking because 20,000 union members haven't been paid in months. Government officials won't pay up, even though they have the money, until the union accepts a program that would cut wages and cause hundreds of layoffs. The strike has shut down planes, trains, the stock exchange, banks, and post offices. Here's today's Dow Bob report. All wages are not created equal in the U.S., but now data shows that even within groups of workers with similar education and experience, there's growing wage inequity. The Economic Policy Institute's State of Working America says most of the growth of wage inequality since 1979 has been driven by the growth of this within-group wage inequity. This wasn't happening from 1995 to 2000. The trend seems to contradict the idea that technology has generated greater wage inequalities by creating greater skill and education differences.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by billionaires for Bush.
Excellent news, Americans. A new way to lie. In a nation that's gone from simple childhood fibs of my dog ate my homework to the more nefarious lies of a White House that has sent hundreds of people to die in Iraq on the false claims that Saddam Hussein was about to hit us with weapons of mass destruction, now we have new technology to extend the culture of lying to anyone with a cell phone. Yes, cell phones not only allow you to make calls or even take photographs, but also to join cells of cell phone liars who will help you cheat on your spouse, skip work, or you name it. Take the Alibi and Excuse Club, a network of some 3,400 subscribers, unknown to each other, who are willing to lie for you in exchange for you lying for them when they're in a pinch. Say you want to slip away for a weekend with a lover. What to tell your spouse? No problem. Just send out a message to the Alibi and Excuse group, and you're likely to get a volunteer who will call your spouse, posing as one of your bosses and explaining that you've been dispatched on an emergency sales mission to New York or Paris or Kalamazoo. You pay a fee to join the club, and you're also under some general obligation to return the favor when other members put out the call for a credible lie. Jumping on an entrepreneurial opportunity, others have found ways to add value to the lying phone schemes. For $2.99, for example, you can equip your cell phone to play the sounds of a rasping cough to simulate a lung infection while you're sitting on the beach sipping a cool one. You can also get honking horns and a screaming ambulance to simulate a traffic jam, thus explaining why you can't get home while you're actually chilling at a bar and watching the game. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, there could be glitches, such as if your spouse joins the same alibi club and takes your call for help in creating a lie so you can have an affair. Ouch.
Hi, my name is Sophie. For 5 years, I lived alone in this big house Joe and I built 35 years ago. Our girls grew up in this house. They visited every couple of weeks, and I loved seeing my grandkids, but most of the time I was on my own. Some days I didn't even go out. I just felt sad. Lonely, I guess. One day my daughter came over and said, "Get your coat, Mom. We're going for a drive." She wouldn't tell me where. When we got to the ASPCA, I got nervous. But once I met little Stevie, everything changed. Stevie's my cat. It's hard to express what a difference little Stevie's made in my life. It's mostly small things, like hearing his ridiculously loud purr. Stevie brought love back into my house. I may have saved his life, I don't know. But I do know that he made mine a lot brighter.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom for this third and final hour of the Tom Hartman radio program this wonderful Friday. And if you want to participate, you can do that. It's pretty easy. Just get your pudgy old fingers out and tap out 866-889-8894, and that puts you right on the air. And kind enough to join us, we, let me start it this way. May Arthur Jones, he's been covering environmental issues with special attention to fish and wildlife. Okay, well, then there must be something to do with the phone lines here.
Give me another call.
Okay, hey, if you can hear me, Ira, why don't we just hang up on Mr. Williams and you try calling him back real quick, and I'll take who's ever on line one. Well, no, line one's gone, too. So anyway, what Mr. Williams, we're going to call him back and get him back on the air. And for some reason, I guess we had a bad phone line there, which does happen from time to time when John Ashcroft's running wild on the liberal phone lines here in the wonderful Northeast United States. But Mr. Williams, Ted Williams, wrote an article for the September-October 2004 issue of Mother Jones magazine, dealing with some of the effects of the Bush energy plan, if that oil drilling out there, in your article for a week's worth of gas. And I was just wondering, maybe you could tell me, what was it that made you go out there and look at what's been the after effects of the Bush-Cheney decisions to open up so much of our wildlife to gas and oil drilling?
Well, this is an issue that's really bothered everyone who cares about fish and wildlife, and hunters, ranchers, fishermen, et cetera.
Right.
We've been following it for a few years, and my editor at Mother Jones, Roger Cohn, suggested I go out and cover this, and I did in May, and it was even worse than I expected.
How so?
Well, there's gas wells everywhere, and very sensitive wildlife habitat. It's BLM land, Bureau of Land Management land, is by law must be managed for multiple use.
Right.
And it's not. This is a single-purpose use, gas at any cost. And a lot of people are questioning why it has to happen all at once. The demand for natural gas is fairly flat at the moment. Eventually we're going to need some, but I don't think that we need to sacrifice all other resources for this.
I
talked to ranchers who are losing their cattle because the cattle have been drinking gas well fluid antifreeze.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I guess there's a bunch of questions I have here. Is, first of all, how is it that a gas well can have so much impact itself? I mean, basically, we're talking about a pipe stuck in the ground. Isn't that right, or is it something more?
No, it's something more. Each of these gas wells are 3.5 acres. There's a lot of machinery involved. There's a lot of disturbance when it's being drilled. There's lights and noise that disturb wildlife all night in critical winter times when they're having a hard time making a living.
Right.
And not only that, but these wells are spaced sometimes every 10 acres.
Wow.
And when you have these vast migrations of wildlife going through the Upper Green Valley and other places in the Rocky Mountain West, they really can't migrate through these corridors anymore. So you get these bottlenecks.
Right.
In wintertime, they're stressed. And if they don't get to their wintering grounds, they die.
Now, are we seeing die-offs already, or is this just something that we can expect to see if we continue on with the process?
Well, unfortunately, nobody's watching. The BLM isn't doing any adequate studies. We are seeing declines, rapid declines in antelope, for example, in Grand Teton National Park, and this is all part of the ecosystem. If they don't make it down to the Red Desert in the winter, they die, and the population in Grand Teton has declined in the last 10 years about I think it was something like 70%.
So the Grand Tetons are where, and then the Red Desert is where, just to give people some geographical idea.
Well, the Grand Tetons is up in the
in the high country, you know, near Yellowstone. It's all part of the Yellowstone ecosystem.
So that's in Wyoming.
Right.
Okay.
And then in the Red Desert is down in the warmer, lower elevations.
So the large animals have to go from the upper, you know, the mountains, so to speak, and actually when winter sets in, instead of getting trapped in 6 or 12 feet of snow, they actually move down where it's warmer and they can survive. Is that it?
Right, and there are some animals that live where the gas wells are being drilled. Sage grouse, which are increasingly rare and may be listed under the Endangered Species Act, are being pushed out by these gas wells. I was fortunate enough to see some doing their mating display in
right.
May out there. But there aren't many rules. There are rules, but the BLM grants what they call exceptions. When a gas or oil company asks for exceptions under the wildlife rules, they're really passed out basically when you ask for them.
Right.
So the rules don't mean a whole lot.
So they just say, well, the rules apply except when you ask them not to apply, and then we'll kind of go around.
Exactly.
I want to make sure, because you can't stay on much more than another 5 minutes here, Ted, but uh-huh. You were talking about the sage grouse there, and you spent some time there with a Linda Baker from the Upper Green River Valley Coalition, and their website is uppergreen.org, uppergreen being all one word. And I've got an article off of their website, and they talk about solutions that they offer. So we're not talking about a bunch of whiny elitist liberals that just, you know, want to do away with everything. There's people that are looking at ways to kind of meet halfway, or am I wrong there?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, nobody's against gas drilling, but public land, by law, has to be managed for multiple use, and gas drilling is just one use. And under the Bush plan, it's the single use, and everything else, including ranching, is excluded. The ranchers are up in arms about this. There's no place to graze their cattle. The cattle are dying. They're being pushed off
right.
range. Hunters and fishermen are very upset. You have traditionally conservative magazines like Field and Stream are writing bitter articles about Bush's energy plan and public
right.
land.
Well, who are they actually blaming? Are they like blaming? Are they just blaming some general government bureaucracy, or are they looking at specific elected officials and saying, "You did this to us"?
The latter. This is a George Bush policy that he's implemented. Dick Cheney has implemented. Cheney's company, Halliburton, is the one who is supplying fracking fluids up there in the drilling technology that makes this gas excavation in the Upper Green Valley possible. They inject fracturing liquids into the wells to break up the formations.
Right.
And unfortunately, these liquids contain toxic chemicals, and they pick up toxic chemicals such as benzene from the gas and oil deposits. So there's a big contamination problem.
Well, now, that was kind of interesting, because I know now one of the options, and we have an artesian well for our house here in Vermont where I live, and one of the options that was available, if your well, you know, stops producing as much as you need, is to do what you're calling fracking or fracturing. But with our drinking water, they would use high-pressure water. What's the difference? What do they use for these gas wells, and why would it be any different?
Well, fracking fluids, as they call it, can be a number of different things. A lot of times it's oil, and it's forced under tremendous pressure into these formations.
Oil
is breaks up the...
As in,
and then they pipe in sand that holds the fractures apart.
Okay.
Of course, this takes a long time. It's very noisy in the winter. It's very disruptive of wildlife.
Yep.
It in some parts of the Rocky Mountain West, it forces out saline solution that's contaminating trout streams. killing off increasingly rare native trout, cutthroats. It's a big problem. And at the moment, there don't seem to be any adequate controls.
Okay. Ted, I know you got to get out of here, so there's about 30 seconds left. This is an important topic. If you can give people anywhere where they should go for more information on this.
Well, the website you just mentioned,
UpperGreen.org.
Green Valley Coalition is probably the best starting point. I'd urge them to read my article with Mother Jones.
Yep.
From there, you just do a Google search, and you'll find all kinds of stuff on this gas at any cost.
Okay. Well, Ted, thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy day to talk to us. I certainly appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure.
And you have a great day.
You too.
All right, Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. We'll be back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me for a short talk and book signing on Monday, September 27th at the Barnes & Noble in South Burlington, Vermont. I'll be discussing my current book, What Would Jefferson Do? A Return to Democracy. Now, more than ever, citizens must heed the wisdom of our nation's third president. If we are to continue being the world's greatest nation, we must lead based on Jefferson's principles. For more information, call BNN Burlington at 802-864-8001. That's 802-864-8001.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The White House calls it downtime, Democrats call it vacation, but no matter how you look at it, a CBS News tally shows that Bush has been at his Crawford, Texas ranch, Camp David, or his family home in Kennebunkport 254 days since his term began in 2000. That's about 40% of his presidency. Most studies show that working Americans average only about 2 weeks of vacation each year.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
is the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Tom, of course, will be back with everybody bright and cheerful on Monday, so you want to be sure to be back for that. In the meantime, you know, it's fun in the sun time for the rest of us up until the top of this final hour. 1-866-889-8894 if anything's tripping your wires today. And, you know, hey, I'm easy to get along with. It can be pretty easy to go. I want to talk a little bit, if we get a chance, and actually, if people call in, I'm going to ask them, you know, about a vision thing. Vision. Personal visions. I'm not talking about governmental visions. I'm not talking about group visions. Personal visions. What is it that you see that you want to accomplish, and how are you going to go about and accomplish that? And I'm going to come back to that one a little bit, but first, we have a couple pressing issues here that we need to discuss. And one of them comes to us by virtue of our wonderful erudite chat room participants. And these guys have erudites just crawling out of their ears. I mean, they got erudites up the yin-yang in that chat room. And easily accessible, by the way, through tomhartman.com. And Mr. Q12 actually informed us of this breaking news that apparently, George Bush had to go into the hospital for an emergency operation today. That's right. He had a frog on his head and goes into the emergency room. Doctor says, well, what's the matter? What can I do for you? And the frog asked if they could remove that wart from his butt. Is that true? Huh? Hey, you know, it was on the Internet. It's got to be true, okay? It's got to be. It can't be. No, you wouldn't get made-up information from Swift Boat ads or the Internet, would you? I mean, come on. There are weapons of mass destruction, aren't they? Another burning question I have. Now, I was looking at a tracking map of Ivan. And, of course, Ivan, you might have remembered as being a hurricane that kind of really did a jolly slap on the panhandle of Florida. And we all figured, well, you know, Ivan's going to go inland, dump all its rain, and bye-bye, Ivan, on to the next letters of the alphabet. And Ivan actually decided that that wasn't good enough. Ivan, I'm looking at a map. Ivan goes up through Alabama, Tennessee, North Carolina, Virginia, heads out into the Atlantic, curves back around, cuts across the southern part, and by now it's just, you know, a non-tropical, just kind of a big rainstorm, and cuts across the southern part of Florida, heads back out into the Gulf of Mexico, where it becomes a tropical storm again, and now it's off into Texas, and they're expecting it actually to do another loop-de-loop in Texas and head back out into the Gulf, so who knows what it's going to do. I guess, it's a back down to a tropical depression now, as it's on land. I'm looking. This is a tracking map from the Weather Underground. It's one of my favorite places to get quick and dirty information on the weather. I just had to. Is Ivan a Democratic operative? I mean, it's just smacking these red states up. But if Ivan wasn't bad enough, Hurricane Jean. Now, more than 350,000 people have been asked to evacuate three Florida counties that were, these were hit hard by Francis, and I don't mean to laugh, that's kind of like, geez, how much can people stand? So Hurricane Jean, which was expected to do head up into the North Atlantic and do what hurricanes do up in the North Atlantic, which is to wear themselves out. Instead, Hurricane Jean did a smaller loop-de-loop than what Ivan did, and instead of heading up into the North Atlantic, it did a quick little loop, and now it's just barreling, straight for Florida. How many hurricanes can Florida get in 1 year? So, of course, we all know some people down in Florida, I'm sure, so we should be, I don't know. The weather. Isn't it amazing? Mother Nature just doesn't cooperate well at all, does she, when she doesn't want to? Okay. Rama Schneider, sitting in for Tom Hartman. And when we come back after this break, I want to talk a little bit about the vision thing. What do people see
in their future. And I'll explain a little bit more in detail what I'm getting at when we come back. But this isn't a group think thing. This is an individual think thing. What do you see, and how do you get there?
Hi, I'm David Orrick. How do you tell if an air purifier is worth what you paid for it? Well, place a balloon over it. If the balloon flies up in the air, like it does with an Orrick air purifier, that's pure fresh air pushing it. But if it falls to the floor, there's virtually no air movement. Try my Orrick air purifier free for 90 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Remember, if the balloon doesn't fly, I wouldn't buy.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Excellent news, Americans. U.S. corporations say that they are no longer offshoring our middle-class jobs. It seems that they've grown afraid of the rising public anger at this self-serving fattening of their already ample bottom lines at the expense of working families. They fear that there will be a political backlash from workers, customers, Congress, and plain old American patriots. Does this mean that greed-headed CEOs are no longer shipping our manufacturing, professional, and high-tech jobs to India, Pakistan, Russia, and other low-wage centers? Of course not. It simply means that they no longer say the word offshoring. Instead, the doublespeak artists of corporate PR departments have coined new euphemisms. Rather than offshoring, they now call it remote global sourcing, or right-shoring, to disguise the perfidy. A new report finds that offshoring, by whatever name, is not only continuing unabated, but accelerating rapidly and expanding into new fields. If you're an architect, if you do legal work or tax preparation, if you're an editor or radiologist, say bye-bye to your professional position, for CEOs are putting these and many more on a virtual boat overseas, with about 80% of the jobs going to India, where they can get the work done for a third or less than they pay to us Americans. The report, prepared by Forrester Research, says that offshoring is increasing dramatically. Forrester's previous prediction was that the U.S. would lose 588,000 jobs to offshoring by the end of this year. Now it estimates that 830,000 will be lost, a 41% increase. Nearly half of corporations surveyed say they're either offshoring jobs now or preparing to. Well, says one offshoring specialist, so what? Quote, it's free enterprise. We're trying to make money. Yeah, and so are bank robbers. This is Jim Hightower saying the proper word for what these CEOs are doing is not offshoring, it's stealing. They're stealing America's middle-class future.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first six payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror. My wife's still in bed. And this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman, the radio program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman, and I'll be taking this ship of intelligence on up to the top of this third and final hour. 866-889-8894, if anybody has anything they need to share with the world, within some boundaries here, you know. Even I have boundaries as far as where and what I'll do, you know. Vision. 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 I'm talking about when I'm saying vision here. I'm talking about you, your life, your family, your kids. What do you expect to see? What do you expect to do? What do you expect to be doing? And here's what got me. I was thinking about how I managed to get into doing any radio at all, period. Look, I am the most improbable person to be sitting around anywhere doing radio, okay? I mean, I never had training at it. I never thought about it. Until one day here in Vermont, I was listening to a local talk show host on a local station that I had the joy of working at for a fair number of years there. I really enjoyed myself. But this is how I got the job, is I was listening to the guy, and I was pretty conservative, claptrap. And I figured out after a couple times of calling the guy and just kind of basically saying, no, what you're saying isn't true. Here's the other side to it. That one day, finally, I said, you know, somebody's got to get up and start saying something other than what these right-wing claptrap throwers are saying, you know. Now, I had never had any experience in radio, not one, zip, zilch, zine, none. But I sat there, I wanted to do it, and I'll be honest, I actually saw myself doing it. I was able to go up to this radio station with a friend, and we were able to sell the station's owner at that time, too, and the manager, on this whole concept that we could sit down and do a liberal versus conservative kind of crossfire sort of thing, but not quite, you know, a little bit on the tamer side. And I was given the chance. And I was given the chance not because I sat around and said, well, you know, if I get this other person to do something, that it'll work out for me. But because I sat there and I saw, I had the vision, or I had the desire to actually go out and make a difference. And I believe I have made it. It's not always been a positive difference. You know, I'll be the first to admit that. But I sat in one of the most conservative parts of Vermont as a self-confessed bleeding heart liberal, and just actually gained quite a few people for that size of, for that market size, that really honestly wanted to listen to me. But sometimes, you know, people call in and they want to hear themselves. So we're going to keep with this vision thing, and we're going to put Dave from Humboldt County, California, on the air, and we'll hear maybe about Dave's vision. Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Oh, pretty fair, Raman. I'm convinced that any future for any of us is really hinging on the very serious subject that we hear so often on the program here, and that is the coming election.
Okay.
Because I really think that in the last three and a half, 4 years, we've seen our whole Social Security surplus get stolen. We've seen a surplus, our Treasury surplus depleted. And now we're, approaching $1 trillion in debt.
Okay, Dave, let me stop you there. Because if you go through the list, I'm probably going to agree with you, at least most of it.
Uh-huh.
Probably maybe even all of it. I'm not sure. Come November, somebody's going to be called president, okay?
Yeah.
We may not like who it is who gets called president. We may like who it is that gets called president. Somebody's going to be called president. Now, you have an option, I guess. You could go blow your brains out if you don't like the results. I've got a daughter I still want to raise. I've got to help her get going into the future and help her be prepared. So whoever wins, whether it's Kerry or Bush or Nader or Badnarik or whoever else is on the list, whoever wins, what is it that you see you doing to make your life better?
Well, I'd say I'm going to see the end of Social Security in short order, because there will be no funds for it.
Okay.
And I think I'm going to see the end of Section 8 housing assistance. I think we're going to see masses of people competing for low-wage jobs.
So you don't see anything here where you have any sense of power. I mean, you're just basically feeling like all this stuff's going to happen to you.
Well, I feel the power we've got is going to be in the next few weeks, and so I do send letters to editors and call radio stations wherever I can, because I really feel that people need to see the reality of what we're going to be up against. Billionaires will do very well if Bush gets reelected.
Yeah. Billionaires did good under Clinton, too.
Yes, they did.
They always do well. But, you know, look, what I'm trying to get at here, and I'll be honest, I'm trying to say, you know, look, we can do so much complaining, but the complaining only goes to a certain point. Don't you agree? Don't you think that at some point you have to make a conscious decision to do something positive, Dave?
I think we got to do it now. I think you, Raman, certainly you, because you have the mic in front of you there. We have a burden on us as heavily as possible to make people aware now of the reality that we will be facing. Maybe you don't see it as badly as I do, but I see it as, I mean, if we get a reelection of the Bush administration, I see it as shifting whatever wealth there was to put in things like welfare, Social Security, food, lunches and whatnot for kids.
Okay.
All that'll be gone.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot for your input, Dave. I appreciate it.
Well, that's my pleasure.
That's great. Okay, you have a great day. We're going to go on because I got other people waiting. And 1-866-889-8894. And let's kind of talk about the vision thing. Let's talk about where we have power in our lives. This is it. We just can't sit here and feel like victims. At a certain point, you got to sit there and say, look, I got to take what I got. I got to do something with it. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe I'm screwy. Alan from Illinois. How you doing, Alan?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing great, actually. What can we do for you today?
Well, I'm a truck driver, and I'm a single guy, so sometimes I have some extra money, and I put aside, and I buy some stocks.
Yeah.
And one of the companies that I bought stock in has a subsidiary, and the subsidiary I found out was doing mountaintop removal in West Virginia.
Oh, coal mining, huh?
Yeah, so I sold that stock real fast.
Good for you. Yeah, seriously, good for you.
Yeah.
How's the truck driving business treating you?
Oh, it's pretty good.
Yep.
Being that I'm a single guy, it's okay. I guess it'd be kind of tough for anybody who's married, has children.
So you must be over the road then.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Always away from home, and I don't think the money's that great.
Yeah. But it's a living. You know, I used to drive, not trucks. I did a lot of long-distance driving when I was younger. I didn't mind it, but after a while, I'll tell you, I reached a point where I said, I can't drive this many hours of the day anymore. So, and then I just told them I quit. I can't do it anymore. So.
Yeah.
You know?
Back in the 70s, when I was a teenager, I had a next-door neighbor who was a union truck driver.
Yeah.
And he made so much more money than I do, I mean, compared to how much money would go back then, that it's a big difference.
Yeah. Well, do you have a chance to join a union at all, or?
No, we don't.
No. Okay, well, maybe.
As a matter of fact, when they have the orientation now for the company I work for, they discourage that. So that makes me want to get involved even more.
Well, yeah, look, don't put yourself out on a limb and then, you know, saw off at the wrong end of where you're sitting. Look into the union stuff and do it somewhat surreptitiously. You know, there are groups, I'm about to tie my tongue over acronyms, so I'm not going to bother. But you talk to some of these large union groups, and they can actually help you work some of this stuff out. You know, look out, help yourself and those around you too, Alan. That's just as important as getting out there and voting. You know.
Yeah, I really believe in unions.
All right, well, good, and maybe someday you get the opportunity will present itself for Alan to get involved, and you'll be able to say, hey, I'm going to do it, because you already thought about it. You already envisioned what a union can do for you.
Yeah, just a little bit at a time.
All right, well, great. Hey, drive safely, Alan, and thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
You bet. Have a great day. All right, 1-866-889-8894. Armin from Florida. How you doing, Armin?
How you doing, Rama?
I'm doing great. You dry today or what? Sarasota, you're farther up north, aren't you?
We're almost in the central west, right?
Yeah.
Along the water, but hopefully that thing will stay way on the other side over there.
Jeez. I mean, you know, look, not everybody in Florida voted for Bush. So, you know, like, you don't have to get hit by too many hurricanes. Just a few for punishment will do.
Well, I'll tell you something interesting that you brought it up, and then I'd like to talk about something else, if I may. But
okay,
first,
be quick.
Well, there's a guy on the Internet that has a map, and he's traced the path of the hurricanes, the three we've been hit with in Florida.
Yeah.
And they've hit about 90% of the red areas in the state that went with Bush, and they went around the blue areas.
Ah, maybe God is speaking to them.
Well, hey.
Well, yeah, you know, hey, it's not for me to say, I don't know, I'm just a mortal. All right, what else you got going on with you, Armin?
Well, you know, this Bush crime family, I wouldn't really say they're masters at diversion and deception. One of the reasons why they're half successful as they are is because the corporate media that is all in, you know, cahoots with them helps keep that persona out in the forefront. You know, it keeps beaming the people with the same thing over and over again and the diversions and the distractions.
Yep.
But anyway, this, I call this tax cut, you know, this quick before the election's coming up tax cut, is really, it's a tax diversion.
Right.
Distraction. It's a tax distraction because the fact is, for most people, I'd say 9 out of 10 people out there, this little pittance that you're going to get is going to be anywhere from a quarter to a fifth of what
okay.
him is corporate
Armin, friends. Let me stop you there for a moment, okay?
What?
I want
what?
You to take the next 30 seconds, and I want you to tell me what Armin can do to make things better. Not what anybody else is doing wrong, but not to feel this is to help you.
What can I do to
what can
make
you
things
do?
Better?
You bet.
Okay, I can do what my wife and I try to do, and the working people that service in restaurants, we try to leave them good tips.
That's
we try
a good
to
one.
Always
like
be
that.
Honest and tell the truth to people that we confront every day of our life.
Yeah.
We try to set a good example and not carouse around and drink and smoke and do drugs, which we do not do. We try to really live the Christian life, and that's being honest and being truthful and trying to always monitor yourself to a degree and view yourself so that you don't take advantage of people. Try to help people that call out for us and need help, that desperately need it, that appeal to us for help. We try to help those people. We try to be human in traffic. We try to be human in the grocery store and not to butt in line or to take advantage or to be obnoxious. We try to be responsible when we buy, and when we can, we try to buy American and promote American jobs.
Armin, that is an admirable list, and I say that without the least bit of facetiousness, because you talk to something that a lot of us forget when we start talking about the whole politics game, is those day-to-day events that happen when you run into people, like you're talking about being nice to people, helping people out, being honest. These are the things that really affect everyday life on a continual basis. Don't you agree?
I totally agree with you, and I agree with the concept behind your thoughts, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
The fact remains, Rama, that Bush could be what some consider him to be, or what some don't, the most brutal, heinous criminal ever put in the White House, but the fact remains that if all the way down the line in his administration, all the people in Washington, all the people in the state houses and local houses, if they didn't follow along and support him and sustain him and be immoral with him, he couldn't amount to a grain of sand in the ocean.
You got it. You got it. Armin, I want to thank you so much for that call, because especially, and in all honesty, I mean this. I'm going to let you go for now, though. But that litany that Armin gave us of those day-to-day things, that is really introspective vision. You know, that's looking at yourself and seeing how you are. Not oh, this is what other people do, and it bothers me, and we've got to change other people doing this. So much of change around us depends on what we do. You know, it's just a fact of life, and there's no way to get around that. And when we go back to this radio business, and me saying, I mean, what's that movie, The Accidental Tourist, or was it the book? I think it was a movie, too. But I'm like the accidental radio guy. Really, I never at all in my life up until one day sat up and said, you know, somebody's got to say something other than that right-wing claptrap that I keep hearing on the radio. Up until that very day, I had no idea that I was ever going to be on the radio. But you know what? Since then, I've been able to help inform people in an awful lot of ways. I've gotten an awful lot of good feedback over the years on that. And I'll tell you something else that I've been able to do, and I think this is like one of my crowning achievements. I was able to play a small part in helping getting Tom on the air. And that, you know, just the fact of getting somebody of Tom's caliber out there so that he has the public outreach where he can talk about the common sense and issues, that alone would be a feather in anybody's cap, I think. You know? So this is that vision thing. It's not what they're doing to me. It's what I'm doing with me. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level. And you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the Project for the New American Century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for the facts on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. In a sweeping agreement covering more than 8,000 farm workers in a federal visa worker program, the Farm Labor Organizing Committee has ended its five-year boycott of the nation's second-largest pickle company, Mount Olive.
Well, we came to terms with the company and the North Carolina Grower Association last week in an agreement that covers over 8,000 workers on over 1,000 farms in North Carolina.
President of the FLOC, Valdemar Velasquez, says they've won the largest union contract in North Carolina's history.
We have a three-step grievance procedure. We eliminated blacklisting. If they complained about something, they were put on a blacklist and then put in the government computer so the worker could never enter the country again on any kind of visa. And we have a seniority system now where workers are able to apply in order of their seniority and reclaim those jobs the next year. and the union will be overseeing this hiring effort in Mexico during the winter months. Mon Olive agreed to put out a 10% wage increase over the next 3 years. So the agreement stretches from Mexico to Ohio.
Unions, churches, and students mounted a massive pressure campaign, including picketing grocery stores. A company spokesperson said Mount Olive is very relieved the boycott is over. Velasquez believes there are two reasons the flock was successful.
They were spending more time fighting protests and other things that we did to get their attention than running their business is one reason. And the other reason is, I think, is just spiritual. We prayed fervently, and boom, the pieces just came together.
There's been no time for celebration, with only 7 full-time organizers trying to implement the labor agreement on more than 1,000 farms. The flock is now setting its sights on helping undocumented workers at non-Mount Olive farms. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through. All right, Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman and the Tom Hartman Radio Program about 5 minutes before the top of the hour here, the third and final hour of the Tom Hartman Show. Tom will be back Monday, sitting right here behind the stainless steel working man's microphone in wonderful Vermont. All right, let me go because we got somebody that wants to say something. Suzanne from Santa Fe. How you doing, Suzanne?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. What's on your mind now?
Well, you're looking for positive things to do.
Yes, ma'am.
How we can influence something.
Yes, exactly. Something.
Something.
Yeah.
I've always been involved in politics, and it's always been sort of a personal thing, and I've decided I need to do something different because democracy is important.
Okay.
So I am taking people to vote on Election Day. I am sending money, as much money as I can, which isn't a lot, to any good candidates wherever they are in the country.
Great.
And Democracy for America keeps me posted on those. And I am also working on trying to influence the kind of voting machines that we use in New Mexico.
All right, that's excellent. Now you mentioned New Mexico. Now, don't you guys have paper trails now on your electronic machines?
Some of them do, and I'm not completely sure which counties. Some of them do, some of them don't. There's a big push here. The Secretary of State is very interested in buying the electronic voting machines, and there are a whole bunch of very active people who are working very hard to get her to wait until there are paper trails on all of the ones that she buys.
Yeah, that's excellent. You know, I really applaud you for what you're doing because, you know, these are the little steps. And I know as well as you do because I do some of them too. I know the wife and I we've given more money probably than we literally could afford, but you know we've been able to do without the money that we've given. But we've given a healthy amount to political. I've given more money to political things this year than I've ever given in my whole life combined, and I mean by a long
time. Me too. Me too.
Yeah, and I dedicate I try to spend a few hours every week, at least, standing out at a street corner with a sign that makes my political feelings known, you know? So it's those, am I off base here, or do you think that these little things add up to make a big difference?
Oh, absolutely. Every person does a few little things, and it just can't be stopped.
Yeah. That's it, and that's why I say, by the way, people like you and my wife and a lot of other people listen to this show and the ones in the chat room, et cetera, us all doing the right thing, we're going to win. It's going to be carried by 5 to 6 percentage points because we're all doing the right thing.
I believe it.
All right. Thanks.
I'm with you, Rama. Thank you.
Okay, Suzanne, you have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Absolutely. Rama Schneider, filling it out for Tom Hartman. He'll be back on Monday. I want to thank you all for joining us. Think positive. Do good deeds. They do come back around. Good deeds beget good endings, you know? It'll happen. And y'all have a great weekend. I'm out of here. And by the way, thanks to Ira for helping out.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.